The Queen's Jewish Link presents the Jewish Living Podcast, the show that examines the many facets of Orthodox Jewish life. Here's your host, Izzo Zwirin.
There is no doubt that being able to focus is one of the struggles many of us face every day. There are so many distractions, stimuli, and tasks to complete that pull us in every direction. In Judaism, we have that to almost an absurd level. Every part of our lives, down to the order in which we are supposed to tie our shoes, is dictated to us by halacha. And for some people, this is more than just a problem to overcome, but a diagnosable condition. That's why I invited on this week's guest.
Hi, I'm Dr. Nachi Felt. I'm a professor at NYU, where I teach graduate students how to do individual counseling. I'm a psychologist at Yeshiva University, where I do therapy for students. And I have a private practice where I specialize in ADHD.
Dr. Felt and I will discuss how ADHD can impact the child's life, Jewish life, and in fact, his own life. Dr. Felt, thank you so much for joining me. We have a little bit of a history. We go back to when we were in the same summer camp, but we recently reconnected in a shul in my neighborhood, and I'm glad to be able to welcome you to the Jewish Living Podcast. Thank you for joining me this week.
My absolute pleasure. Always fun to get together with Maganav guys.
That's right. Oh, now the cat's out of the bag. People know I went to Maganav. I have only mentioned it 1,000 times before on this podcast. I want to get a little bit of a background on you in particular. So you're clearly a psychologist who specializes in ADHD in particular. I'm curious why you chose to get into this line of work and how'd you get there?
That's a really funny question. I actually started out first in trauma, because I wrote my dissertation on that, and then moved on to anxiety, because that's what I'm treating most of the time at Yeshiva University. And I only kind of got pushed into ADHD by Dr. Blumenthal. Dr. Norman Blumenthal saw me during one of our Zoom classes where he was actually talking about ADHD, and I was literally taking my medication at that exact second. So being unmedicated, I impulsively blurted out, "Ha, that's so funny. Look, I'm taking my meds." And like right then and there, it just was out there. And after the class, he asked me if I could stay like for a few minutes. And he said, "You know, I'm actually going to be making something on OHEL about ADHD, and I'd love to have you speak. Would you mind doing it?" And I guess, I don't know, I just said yes. I didn't necessarily think about it. And then like the call ends and I'm like, oh my God, what did I do? I never really spoke about my ADHD. I always kind of like hid it because I was hoping that people would think I'm normal.
So to speak.
My wife was always like harassing me that like, just get over it. It's fine. Like it's not embarrassing to have ADHD. And I was like, yeah, but there's like stigma and this and that. And then everyone thinks that you're like mentally incompetent or not as felt like capable as everyone else. And then I was just afraid of like a lot of the stigma and a lot of what surrounds any like non-neurotypical brain deficiency. So it kind of made it that I was just a little bit, it was clearly a very ADHD thing. I was impulsive and I signed up for something that I was not really ready for. And as the date got closer, I was getting more and more nervous. And it was kind of in a weird way, and I don't mean this in any offense to any of the communities that use this term more primarily, but I felt like it was a little bit of like I was being outed, right? And it was like my coming out party where I like kind of was sharing for the first time that I had ADHD. It turned out really well. The videos, Growing Up with ADHD, by Dr. Nachi Felt. It's on YouTube. Just type in Dr. Nachi Felt or something like that. It should come up. OHEL. And it was my first, like that was my first foray into the scene. And the reaction we got was amazing, actually. People were super, super excited about it. And Dr. Blumenthal afterwards said, Nachi, you're a natural here. You're clearly really good at this. You found yourself your niche. And that was that. Ever since then, I've just been grabbing extra training at NYU Grossman at the medical school, and then with other world experts in ADHD. It's only a handful, actually. It's literally, you can count them on one hand.
And by the way, we will link to that video in our show notes and on our social media so people can view it without having to go through the search method. You can just click on the link. But yeah, sorry to interrupt. You can continue. You're one of the few ADHD specialists.
Yeah, so it's important to note that there's like a pet peeve of mine, and always makes me look bad to say it, but is that there are levels in life. There are levels in smicha, you know, like there's the associate's degree smicha you got online. There's like a 1-year smicha. There's like a Chavetz Chaim smicha that's 14 years. Like there are levels in smicha. There are levels in degrees. Like you could, when you become a therapist, there's like the 12-month master's program. There's like an advanced social worker plus licensing program, like around, let's say 3 years, right? And there's a doctoral program where you spend like a good, like almost a decade in school to become a doctor, right? So in there's also levels within ADHD. There's like coaches, which is like a few-month course. And then there are a few like ADHD therapists. But the idea of having like real scientists in ADHD, that's very rare, right? Meaning you'll find a million different ADHD coaches. Anyone who's ever had ADHD then becomes an ADHD coach if they've become like successful. And I think they should be. There's so much that they can share. There really is. Their tactics, their techniques, the way they've gotten through their ADHD. But what I was attracted to more was the science. I kind of was drawn to that. It's like my background, and like that's kind of what I was trained in is the science. And that is very, very, very few and far between to find. There's like the same names keep popping up again and again. Russell Barkley, Rothstein and Ramsey, Hallowell, Ted Hallowell, and who's that other one? Gallagher. Like it's the same couple of names that keep coming up, and like you see them on blurbs on each one's book, like everyone's a blurb on the other guy's book, and so like that's really what I kind of got into is the science behind ADHD.
All right, so before we get into a little bit more of the nuts and bolts, can you define ADHD for everybody? People know mostly what it stands for. I'll let you talk about it, but I know there's been a long, recent history of ADHD. There used to be also another classification of ADD, which I don't think we use anymore. But if you can give us a kind of a working definition of what we're going to be dealing with for the rest of this conversation and a little bit of the history behind it.
Sure. So a brief history of ADHD, which is it really goes back to actually what it originally was called, which is minor brain retardation. Mild brain retardation. Really, like it is a retardation in the development of a brain. People with ADHD are developmentally delayed. Like our brain is different. I have ADHD, and I thought it would help me to tell my wife, look, no, really, it's scientific. My brain's developmentally delayed. She wasn't buying it. But the brain really is not as developed. So what ADHD means and what it includes, therefore, are any of the brains that are affected by those deficits in its ability to monitor time, to be able to kind of effectively gauge and hold in space this idea of time. Meaning, you'll see how it kind of connects to everything, because if I'm unable to kind of manage my attention, where it goes and when I do it, so then all these other things, all the things that everyone knows as symptoms of ADHD, being fidgety, being distracted, being like all those things, the impulsiveness, that's all coming from that core of being unable to effectively monitor and manage time.
Hmm.
So ADHD now will include ADHD with an inattentive type and a hyperactive type, and then a combination, meaning it's still the same core deficit, right? Which is this inability to effectively monitor and manage time. So it's the same problem, just some are more inattentive, meaning where the deficit is more being unable to shift attention properly and to apply it when it needs to be applied. And without the hyperactivity, where it's the same core deficit of being unable to shift attention effectively, meaning based off of what you want to focus on, instead you're kind of pulled after. And now it also has this extra impulse that's pushing you towards whatever it is that you end up focusing on.
Okay, and how is ADHD different from other cognitive disorders that might be out there?
I guess one difference would be that ADHD is more of an executive dysfunction, meaning it doesn't necessarily affect the other aspects of our brain. It's only really hitting the prefrontal cortex, right? Where it's like that, the process of maintaining and doing tasks and kind of diverting and sustaining attention. So it won't affect our, like, for instance, math or reading. Again, it may make it more difficult, right? That's definitely true. But the actual ability to process, meaning it's not it's not a, it doesn't mean that there's a deficit in our like IQ, meaning there are many people with ADHD who are brilliant and like absolutely off the charts, insanely brilliant, which honestly also kind of makes it harder for them because it means their brain is working so much faster. Imagine, right? It already has ADHD and now it's also super fast, or also able to retain and store and manage so much information. It could be very overwhelming, and it oftentimes is comorbid with anxiety or with depression or with a lot of other things that kind of come with that because it's so hard for them to effectively manage the information. Russell Barkley is a cute way of putting it. He says that ADHD is not a disorder of knowing what to do. It's knowing when to do it, meaning having that knowledge and being able to access knowledge when we need to.
So you mentioned that there's only like three or four primary people that have studied this. Why do you think that is so understudied in the field at this point?
Well, there's other people who have studied it. There are hundreds of people who have studied it, but the people who have risen to the top and become like the big like standard bearers of ADHD and then kind of keep spreading it, that's rare. I wonder. That's a very good question. I think that a lot of it could be due to the fact that there's going to be a deep point. So just bear with me here, right? Which is that like with many mental illnesses, right? Something that we can't see and we can't quantify is often harder for us to identify and therefore be okay with. It's almost like one patient told me that they wish they had Down syndrome instead, because then at least everyone would kind of have lower expectations of them.
There's a visual aspect of it when you see someone with Down syndrome. You don't have that with ADHD. I get it.
Exactly. And so therefore, because people can't see it, they don't know what it is, and our brains are hardwired to therefore create some sort of semblance of order, right? We're naturally order creating beings. That's what we do. We make patterns, we make top 10 lists, we make roads and rules, and if you've been to Chavetz Chaim, rules and more rules and more rules, right? So we're order creating beings. And so in order to create order, we have to kind of give a name and a label and a category to everything we see. So if it's visual, I could be like, oh, that person's impaired. That's okay. I put him in the category of impaired. But if I can't see it, I mean, if you look just as normal as you and I, right? No one can tell the difference that I have ADHD and someone else doesn't. We both look successful. What do you mean? He's a doctor. He's a professor. He's a speaker. Like, he looks normal, right? But they're not seeing what's going on inside. And so therefore, step two is that they then assume, they ascribe it to things that they do know, things that are already part of their working world, right? Things that are less amorphous as executive function. And instead, they get to call it things that are easy and more familiar to them. Lazy, stupid, not motivated, dumb, right? And it, therefore, step three leads to this tremendous stigma against ADHD and against people with any neurotypical like kind of deficit, because then there it's almost like you're part of the people making excuses for this kind of immoral or lack of character, you know, for these moral deficiencies in people.
All right, now you mentioned a couple of things there that people might label someone who has ADHD. I noticed one thing you didn't say is unfocused. Now, is that because you didn't think of it at the time, or is that something that's more accurate, that somebody with ADHD is naturally able to focus less on one topic than someone else who's not afflicted?
So it's a very good question. The reason why I didn't say it is because, yeah, similar to what you're saying, which is we are unfocused. So I was only choosing the things that aren't true,
right?
Which is lazy, stupid, dumb, not motivated. Like, that's not true. That's not necessarily true. It may become true after you've beaten us down and made us feel like we're dumb, lazy, and stupid, and we may have lost the self-esteem, the self-efficacy, the self-motivation to push ourselves. And yeah, we may have, it's not lazy, it's despondent, it's low self-esteem, it's not stupid, it's just not motivated, not caring, or not feeling capable. But yeah, I chose the ones that are labels that people make out of weakness and ignorance.
All right, so I want to divide the rest of our conversation into two main topics and then come back to a couple of things at the end, and that's children and adults. I want to first start with children. I'm guessing, based on no data whatsoever, that my podcast listeners are a lot of adults with children, and some might be wondering, first of all, is there something that I should be looking out for at different ages that I could kind of get my child the help he needs or she needs earlier on, that I don't want to wait until it's too late or until they're already set in certain ways, if there's something that I could nip in the bud earlier on? How early do these things manifest? What are things that I should be looking out for?
Good question. So the first thing I would say is it's never too late. Could always get them help. Number two is really going back to that other point I made. If you start sensing or feeling that your kid is lazy or stupid or dumb and all those things, that's a great place to start. Maybe take them in for an eval. And I'll tell you why. Kids do as much as they are capable of doing. Most kids, healthy, developmentally healthy children, want to make their parents and primary caregivers proud. They want to make them happy. We're kind of hardwired to do that. And in fact, we spend our entire adult lives making our primary caregivers happy, our bosses, our government, our spouses. Like, we're hardwired to do that. So if your child's not doing that, there's something wrong. Something's blocking them from doing it. Otherwise, they would. And a lot of times parents will have a hard time seeing that because it's much easier, again, right, to call it the things that we kind of grew up with, those narratives that are already in our minds and are more familiar to us. But it could be helpful to kind of break out of that uneducated perspective, that perspective of weakness, and to kind of think of, like, believing in your child. Maybe my child is really, surprise, a good kid, right, who's doing the best that they can, and it's just limited. So let me see, like, maybe that's a great place to start.
Now, for those who are out there that are thinking, well, I don't want to have my child labeled. You mentioned the stigma about it before. So first of all, is ADHD something that could be hereditary? Do we know enough about that yet?
Oh, yeah. It is so hereditary. In fact, I want to take this moment to just knock out a couple of, like, classics that I usually get with a lot of presentations. No, it doesn't come from your diet. You really think that processed food is the reason why your kid can't focus? Come on, are you serious? Like, really? It's sugar. It's gluten. Gluten. That's what did it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, obviously gluten could have some sort of effect, right? Or some
anything but, we put in our bodies will have an effect on the rest of our bodies. Effect on us,
yeah. But really, to have this widespread deficiencies in our brain, a developmental disability, like, you don't get Down syndrome from freaking processed flour. Like, come on. Right? And people still are stuck in that. And it makes so much sense based off of what I pointed out in the beginning, which is
you want order.
We want order. We want to say that, oh, I know the cause of it and I could fix it. And it's so sad. And it's kind of infuriating to me that parents keep doing this and putting their heads back in the sand. And they'll find all the studies that say, oh, this and that. Like, Feingold's diet, that's really where this started, was debunked years ago. Years and years. It was in the 70s or whatever. Right? And all the finds about gluten and this and that. It's great, right? Maybe. But really, let's just talk practically. You want to have another fight with your kid about what they could or can't eat? Really? Is that what this child needs? With all the challenges going on between you and them and the discipline and the control in the home. Really? You want to make another fight? I just think that whether or not you believe the science or not, which the science is almost unequivocally against any of this stuff, right? It's hereditary. It comes genetically. It's a brain development thing. It's in your brain. Your brain's not going to change whether or not you have gluten or not have gluten. But if you don't want to believe me, just think about it. Is this really the fight I want to fight? Like, do I want to be fighting my kid about this stuff? Like, or do I want to be trying to work with my kid to give them structures and systems to help them manage their executive dysfunction?
Right. Now, you mentioned earlier about the comorbidities. So are there other cognitive deficiencies that are common to come along with ADHD, maybe dyslexia, learning disabilities, other things of that ilk? Or
I'm aware. There's
nothing that is correlated.
There are some, right? People have been finding some connections between OCD and ADHD, which, again, OCD at its core is really an anxiety disorder, right? They've been finding some connections there, which, off of my limited experience, kind of makes sense, right? I mean, if you're struggling with your executive functioning, so it's very hard for you to create that order that everyone else does naturally, and it's very hard for you to, you know, choose, sustain, and complete tasks. It could be, life could become very overwhelming for you, and therefore you'll have so many loose ends that, yes, anxiety, it would almost kind of make sense for you to be anxious. Like, and if you weren't anxious, I would wonder, hey, why not? Like, what's going on?
Right. Boys versus girls. Where is this going to be more common? Is there one that's going to be more common?
Obviously, both anecdotally and scientifically, it's been found to be more common in boys, but it doesn't mean that girls don't have it. You know, we're all about equality nowadays, and we don't want to rob the girls of that same experience. Let them also, you know, let them eat cake. I'm kidding. But, like, that idea that it's not limited to boys. It's definitely the hyperactive type is a little bit more common with boys, and girls maybe have an inattentive type. But and none of them are limited per se. Again, genetic is genetic. So choosing if you're tall or short, right, same thing. We don't say, oh, well, only boys are tall and only girls. Yeah, sometimes more boys are taller than girls, right? So sometimes, like with ADHD, more boys will have the hyperactive type than girls, but it's non-discriminatory, meaning it's
Right.
genetics.
Okay, and now you mentioned earlier about getting your child tested if you see that there might be something there. Now, hypothetically, you have a child, or I have a child, or someone out there has a child that tests and they diagnose them with ADHD or doesn't have to be ADHD, another cognitive disorder. But I'm currently
It's
sending
not a
them to,
cognitive disorder. It's
sorry,
just right. Development. Yeah, it's a developmental disability in a
a
sense.
developmental disability or any other developmental disability. And I find that my child does not go to a school right now that I feel equipped to handle it. How big of a deal is it to send it to a school that can deal with it versus one that doesn't really have the equipment or the facilities or the staff necessary to handle that?
That's a really good question. It's a really, really good question. And again, my personality is going to be involved with this a little bit, meaning I'm a non-alarmist. I don't know if you guys could tell so far from my attitude on this. But it really depends on parents. Like if you're a parent who wants to kind of coordinate and control as much of the environment as possible, then yeah, I think it would make sense that you would want to send your child to a school that could attend to their needs. But in reality, the real work happens at home. It really does. We are capable of helping our children develop the skills they need to have the executive functioning, by doing that at home, really from a young, if we start that really young, like for instance, if they become familiar with order, with organization, then they'll feel weird when they're not, and therefore that will become a natural inclination for them is to seek that order, to seek something that's more organized and calm. So I'm very into creating a calm oasis at home, meaning creating order at home. And then once their home is organized, it makes it much easier for them to do that in school. And again, we could do like a lot of simple things already at home. For instance, having a laminated index card that's clipped to their backpack handle that says, "Do you have your, right? Accordion notebook, textbook, whatever, like pencil box, right?" And I'm very into the accordion notebook thing. So those of you who want to grab some free tips, the accordion notebook is a game changer, meaning it keeps all of their stuff in one place, right? Or like having everything there, it's easy to get. They don't have to worry about the hole puncher, the this, the that. It's in there. It can be easily labeled. It's easy for them to just open up and shove a paper in. It's a game changer. But if we could kind of help our children have that ability to make it a little bit easier for them to manage their executive dysfunction. But again, I'm not saying that that means that like your child will be fine. Very likely they may have to struggle with many of the side effects of having unmedicated ADHD or not as well treated ADHD, which is low self-esteem, low sense of self-efficacy, social isolation. There's like I mean, I don't want to freak anyone out, but like the stats aren't good for the non-medicated, non-treated ADHD. There's an 8-year life expectancy difference. Like really, kids, people, human beings with ADHD live shorter than the other people. Like
Wow.
on average, between 7 to 8 years less.
Well, now that you mentioned unmedicated, I'm going to have to go into my medication questions. Parents who are worried and afraid of what the medications for ADHD might do to my child, aside from treat the ADHD, will it change their personality? Will it have other effects? Now, I'm not asking you right now to diagnose a fictional child and to tell me what a medication might do to a specific child that you're not treating right now. That would be highly unfair of me. But from my experience with friends of mine who have had it, I know that there is a change to people when you take these medications. What do you say to people when they are worried about either medicating themselves or if they're worried about medicating their children with these drugs? So what's the balance that they have to hit?
So I was actually about to say that it is a balance, and I feel like it's a very cliche answer, but medication and any of these things, right? It's really a balance. Like even going back to like the diet thing, right? I don't think that my whole rant against thinking that diet is the cause means that therefore just ply your kid with sugary food. I'm not saying that, right? I'm just like you could kind of take that into account. But it's a similar idea with medication, meaning it's really an individual personal choice that every parent has to make on how comfortable they are with it. I know that there's a lot of people who have like all these things against big pharma and things like that. So like, I don't want to come in between you and your conspiracy theory. I'm totally fine. Like you're entitled to that. But I do think that it's important for people to recognize that medication is highly subjective, meaning you have to try different medications and see what works for your child in a way that where the like almost the cost benefit analysis, like do the changes to my child's personality or whatever other changes may happen, do they outweigh the benefits of him having increased performance in school, greater social skills, and a greater self-esteem and sense of self and ability to graduate elementary school, graduate high school, be able to get a decent grade and get into something more than like Rockland Community College? Like, is that something?
No offense to people that went to Rockland Community College.
Right. No offense. And honestly, if you got there, then that's also a very like impressive thing. It's work. It's progress. It really is. And it's not easy. If a person with ADHD going through Rockland Community College is going through a tremendously tough, difficult, and I think a rewarding experience that good for them, right? Good for them. But yep. It really is therefore case specific. If Rockland Community College is something that is a goal, right, then that could be taken into account. If Harvard is a goal, then that should also be taken into account, meaning you kind of have to weigh what are the benefits versus what's the cost. And I know that Dr. Pelkowitz has this great line, which I'm going to steal from him, but when people ask about, oh, but don't medications have side effects? And he'd always say like, yeah, and low self-esteem is also a side effect. Like that idea is just so important and is again, it's harder to see because it's intangible and people struggle with intangibles.
All right. I want to shift over to adults right now. So adults who get diagnosed later in life, first of all, does that mean that they didn't have it as a child and it came later? Or does that mean that somebody missed something or parents didn't try to get them diagnosed? Is it possible to have not really had the effects as a child and then only see them later on? How does this work?
Or that people didn't notice the effects, or the effects were like managed differently. Like, yeah, it's possible. Yeah, it happens.
Could it be more severe later on in life?
So I actually just had someone call me and say that they found that as they get older, it's much harder for them to effectively manage their ADHD. So like when they're younger and they had more energy and mental bandwidth, they were able to kind of cope with it better and like kind of keep it all together. But as they got older, it was like, you know, it's like harder to hold certain things in when you get older.
I'll also say that as a child, your life is very structured. I shouldn't say that. Some people had a very unstructured childhood and don't want to, you know, assume anything, but most children have a structured childhood. There's school and you come home and you do your homework and you go to bed and this is what you do at this time and this is what you do at this time. And there's someone kind of managing your schedule. Once you get to adulthood, you're the one in charge of your own schedule. It's now up to you to make sure that everything has some sort of structure. So that I as I'm asking you this question and I'm listening to your answer, I'm understanding why something might manifest itself later on. If you're now, you used to be reliant on someone else, but now it's all on you, then maybe you have these issues. What should people look out for if maybe they think that they might want to get themselves tested? Now, before you answer that question, I will say that every time I listen to another podcast or I have a guest on, I inevitably hear something as, oh, maybe that's me. Is that something that I need to look out for? I'll give you one example. I had somebody on at this point 2 years ago already, who spoke about the dangers of parents with their cell phone and how much use they are on the cell phone. And at the time I was like, oh, well, I'm glad that that's not me. And then like the next day I'm like, oh, that's definitely me. All of what he just said, I do every single one of those things. So I don't want anybody out there to think, oh, ADHD, maybe I have ADHD. What are some of the things that people could look out for, real tangible or visual things that they could see about themselves that they would know, maybe I should go look out and get myself tested?
So I would push back on okay. that a drop, and I feel bad it is your show. So
no, like, that's why I'm here. I'm here to learn.
That opinion of, I think it's always good to be asking, is that me? Meaning, you know what? I probably use my cell phone too much too. And I'm happy that that speaker brought it up and then you got self-conscious about it. Now you said it to me because now I'm getting self-conscious about it. And I want to actually be aware of that. Like, that is something I want to be aware of. The difference here with ADHD, which I would also still say is great for you to think like, oh, well, maybe I do have it, is just to recognize it with a caveat, which is, okay, let's say you do. Who cares? Meaning, I think it's important to realize that thinking that you may have it doesn't mean you have to run out and get diagnosed. Because let's just take you as an example. Let's say you do have it. Is that going to change your life?
Right. I don't know.
If it won't change your life, then who cares?
Right.
But if you're struggling in your life, you should definitely be thinking, could it be ADHD? Because then there is a who cares. You care. Because right. Now you could get help. You can get a diagnosis. The diagnosis will get you medication. You can get treatment. And then you could pull your life together. So, like, if your life is great, then I would say, who cares? Right? Meaning, even if you have ADHD, who cares? Right? You're doing great. You're managing well. Ooh la la. Awesome. Right? I still think there's benefit in thinking about it. Like, maybe I do have it. Because maybe one day you could read books and see how you can become better at being you. Right? Which, you know, hey, you know, we're all, like, many of us want to grow and want to get better. So, like, it doesn't hurt to think maybe I do have ADHD. But what I would say is that definitely if you're struggling, that's something you should look into. There's a million and a half, like, online surveys and stuff, which, again, aren't necessarily scientifically valid, but they'll definitely tell you there. I don't know if, like, I want to go through it here. I think just look it up online, right? They'll tell you. And then it's a consultation. You go to someone, a mental health professional, they'll give you an assessment and boom, done. But again, only if you're struggling. If you're not struggling, then if you think you have ADHD and you take one of the online surveys and the things you do, so then buy a book for $15 on Amazon, you know, like Driven to Distraction. That's a great book by Halliwell, or any of Barclay's books, or Ari Tuckman's books. Like, yeah, you grab a book, well, a book that kind of speaks to you, that you feel like interested. What's it going to cost you to think maybe I have ADHD? $17, right? And it could potentially enhance your life. So, like, I don't think there's much damage in doing that. But if you're struggling in your life, yeah, then you should talk to someone. Like, talk to a mental health professional. Again, someone who is ADHD specific, meaning there's a lot of generalists, and it's a great thing to be a generalist, but often you miss out on some of the nuances and expertise in an expert. So
Now, for those out there who are wondering why I decided to bring an ADHD conversation into the Jewish Living Podcast, I wanted to know, are there specific areas in Judaism that we might see ADHD manifest itself that, let's say, the rest of the secular world or other religions might not have, that might not see on a daily basis or on a basis when we're doing a specific task?
It's a very intriguing question. This is something that could be more like universal, but I think it's heightened into the Jewish, the more, I guess, religious Jewish, so what we would colloquially call frum world. There's just so much more that has to be done in our lives. There's so much more that has to be balanced. There's so much more that has to be done, accomplished. And it's just an incredible load on people that could be very taxing to an executive function, right? So if your brain isn't built for that, if your brain isn't necessarily hardwired to process executive functioning that well, it could be super overwhelming. There's just so much.
So for example?
For instance, Pesach.
Okay.
Imagine a Jewish mother with ADHD by Pesach.
That's good. Pesach itself is overwhelming. I can't imagine
someone with executive.
Exactly. And then they have to worry about the koshering, the turning over the kitchen, the cooking, the cleaning, the packing if you're going away for everything. It's
forgetting chametz anywhere. Because if you forgot chametz over there, you're like, right. What? I have executive dysfunction. Yeah, but it's a kares. You know, right.
Yeah, and I would imagine this. So, but almost every single part of an Orthodox Jewish person's life is very stringently required to have some thought or some action going at the same time. So, if you're
if you're going around the Tishrei Yomim Tovim and you say, all right, I have to do Tashlich and Kaparos and build a sukkah and go to the mikvah if you're a guy on for Erev Shav, on Erev Yontif, or if you're a woman, probably one time during that month at some point.
Even bedikas. Imagine with ADHD and bedikas, losing track of your vest and not knowing which thing you're up to or what yeah. day, or losing the bedika cloth. Like, again, that could really be a damper on a relationship. And also imagine like the sense of self and feeling like so angry at yourself and having a husband angry at you. But this is not limited to women. Like, take the greatest mitzvah of all time, right? The Chol HaMoed trip. Imagine a husband with ADHD, right? Trying to pack all that and having the matzah with the tuna fish and making sure he put in a Ziploc bag and it's fully closed and not leaking throughout the car so it smells like tuna fish for the next 3.5 months, right? Like, there's just so many different things that have to be done with so many. Like, if you're living in a different culture and environment where you have 2 kids, a nice big fat car, there's no real pressure because you don't have to get anywhere before the sun sets, you know? Like, life could be like a little bit more manageable without such great executive functioning. But like, when there's so many deadlines and so many, just like you said, like stringencies and things that are time specific, and it's just, and so many demands on us, it does make life a little bit more difficult.
Right.
To
what about Jewish education? How does that manifest itself differently?
I think expecting children to learn another language and then do complex reasoning and advanced cognitive skills in that other language from a very young age, and a language that's not used by anyone else in the world, is not exactly the easiest academic load. Right. So whether it's little girls learning Chumash and having to go through like Chumash and Rashi, like it's not even modern Hebrew. Like, it's a totally different thing. You can't use that on the bus. I mean, you could. There's a lot of funny seminary girl stories, but like, like Aramaic, like really? Like, it's just a lot. It's a lot. And it could be a little bit more taxing on the student or child with ADHD than it would be in, let's say, just, again, I'm not saying it's easy if you don't have to learn Gemara. I'm just saying that it could be even harder if you do.
Right. And for the amount of hours that, let's say, high school boys or even beyond that are expected to sit and learn Gemara, I'm assuming that's not easy to sit there and just do the same type of thing for hours on end.
Wait, oh, so you have an executive function problem and your brain doesn't process as easily here. Why don't you sit in front of this huge sheet with little floating black letters, right? And tiny, tiny, tiny print all over the place in a language that no one else knows, and try to figure it out all day. No, really. What, you didn't do it? Oh, you go. You're never going to become something successful. Oh, let's chazer this on Shabbos when you want to play.
It sounds, I'm sorry I'm laughing, but but you're right. It's a way to explain it to people that might not have thought about that before. And it sounds just awful. Especially if you're coming from the expectation of this is what everybody does. You especially for people that are sent to Israel to learn for a year, and let's say you have ADHD or you don't even know that you have ADHD, and now you're sitting and learning, and now there isn't the break to go also have secular studies involved in there. You're basically sitting and learning the same types of items from the moment you wake up after davening until you go to sleep. It's a morning
Seder. If you have a person who is walking through a 2,000 cubic feet thing with a dead person, so therefore that changes the status of him. According to Rava, that would make it that therefore he can walk this amount, but Abaye would say a different amount. So according to that opinion, in Tosas, who has a question on Rashi's grip of how that works in Tumah, but again, not like the Truma Sedeshin's way of understanding Tumah, right? But instead the Rashi's, like the Pashifat way of understanding Truma. So in that understanding, what do you think? Really?
Honestly, I stopped listening to you. Really? Halfway through that.
I'm just saying, like, it's crazy. Like, if you just take a step back and, like, think about what we're putting our kids through, like, first of all, give them a huge pat on the back, hug them, kiss them, be like, oh, my God, I can't, like, it's incredible. And, like, a lot of people feel like, well, what do you mean? I did it. Yeah, and at what damage? And if you don't think you're damaged, ask your spouse. at what cost?
So we went through a couple of the items, children, adults, things to look out for. I want to get now for not just for people with ADHD, but for everybody out there who may have trouble focusing every now and then, might have trouble remembering things. I feel like those things aren't necessarily exclusive to people with ADHD. It's for everybody. But for everybody out there that has these issues that they frequently feel, some strategies for them. I know you mentioned the accordion folder. I'm not sure if that's going to work for everybody in every area, but what are some strategies that you put into place or that you offer to your, I'm not sure what you call them at this point, clients, patients?
I like patients, but just because it makes me feel good.
So what are some of these strategies that you offer to them, sans medication?
So I'll often even say that it's not even ADHD specific, because executive dysfunction could apply in many different areas, right? You can get it as a result of anxiety, depression, bipolar, like there are Alzheimer's, right? Meaning executive functioning is a brain thing, right? So the brain doesn't really care. You have ADHD, you don't have ADHD. If the brain's affected in the prefrontal cortex, it'll be affected. That's it. So that being said, it also, right, once we make it easier for the brain to be able to manage things, it'll make it easier for even the regular normal brain, because that's the idea. It's kind of loosening, decreasing the load on the brain. So it'll just make it easier for everyone. So generally I call these like just good practice for everyone and required practice for those with executive dysfunction. So some ideas that I talk about in, let's say, the video, the OHO video, right, would be organizing your week, right? Again, it shouldn't really take more than 10 minutes. I found that I've timed it and it takes around 7 to 12 minutes, right? Organizing your week could be a huge thing off your back, right? It means you have a set time. I like mine at Saturday nights, right? You sit down, you have some pizza or whatever it is that you do on your, you know, Matzah Shabbos ritual, right? And you just plan out your week. What do we have to get done this week? Okay, so which kid's dentist appointments, the car needs to get an oil change, like all those kind of things, just like plan it out. This way your week is kind of set in front of you. The from term would be shulchan aruch lefanecha, right? Like the table's set, right? You basically know what you're doing, walk into that week, and it could bring a sense of calm for everyone, right? Meaning just like having your Shabbos table set before Friday night, or, you know, like there's a sense of calm coming in, you know, like you don't have to do it, but if you do it, it could help, right? So that idea I think is very helpful. I think another thing that could be very helpful is the idea of chunking things into tasks. Like, for instance, if I know that there's a bunch of things I have to do on the computer, I'll chunk that onto like one sticky note and put that on the computer. So like it could be a whole bunch of different things, like pay my ticket, you guys are out of town. You don't have to worry about that. But by me.
For those of us who don't live in New York City.
Yeah, and the oppressive regime I live in. So like I would like pay a ticket, order flannel sheets, and change my banking communication process to like e-file or whatever, something like that. It's three wildly different things, but the common denominator is it's on my computer, right? So, or if I have to go to, let's say, the store, right? So if I know that the post office is like three stores down from the grocery store, and then across from that is the like some other story. So I'll kind of try to chunk that all together. So like if I go, I'm not running back and forth. I kind of chunked it into like a common denominator of how it could be easier to do. So again, you'll see why, right? It's kind of almost like intuitive why that's so helpful for someone with ADHD, but it's also helpful for normal, like for regular people. Like, hey, well, who wouldn't want to like kind of make your life easier?
Right. I'm also a big list maker myself. Like I like having my list of things I need to do, and nothing feels better than, you know, checking off that list or crossing it off. I have a chalkboard and erasing the thing off of the list. So the list looks smaller. All those things, it gives you like the sense of accomplishment that if you just had it in your mind, first of all, you could forget it easily. Even those among us who are not afflicted, we can easily forget the tasks that we're supposed to make. Writing it down lets you keep them, and then giving you that satisfaction of crossing it off, checking it off, erasing it. Those are things that I really like to do. What about these task management apps that people have? Is that something that you have experience with?
Not so much. I have a few, but like I remember seeing like conference at ADHD conferences, there's there was a presentation dedicated to these task management apps. It's great. The reason why I'm not so into it beyond just like the regular notes and reminders on an iPhone is because a lot of the people I work with find that once they're on their phone, it's already like distraction land. So we're trying to minimize.
If you've ever tried to dive in mincha off of an app, you know what you're doing.
Right?
Yeah.
So yeah, like sometimes it's complicated to learn it and this and that. And like, I don't know. I find that even like Google Doc, just making a Google Doc, you should know Google Doc when you press the button for what, like that you finish something, when you like click the little like bullet, they did it, it automatically crosses it out.
Right. Yum. It's the best. Exactly. All right. Before I let you go, Dr. Felt, is there anything else you want to let us know about anything that we spoke about or anything that we haven't spoken about?
Sure, of course. There's one thing I keep like stressing again and again, and I'm sure I said it already now in just this podcast, but the idea of recognizing that like it's a brain problem and it could be addressed, it could be dealt with, and it doesn't mean that it's a character defect. It doesn't mean that anyone's, you know, not as good, right? In fact, it could almost be argued that a person with ADHD has less free will because they're less capable of making a decision of what they want to do than someone else. So that idea, I think, is super important to remember, that this is something that really all mental health and all mental illnesses are something that's kind of in the head. And we all know this already, that the earlier we kind of attend to it, the better the results are. And at the same time, to remember that it's never too late, meaning you could have someone who's already 25, 30, 45, 50. Like it's never too late to kind of get a grip. And it doesn't hurt to buy a book. You know, just go online and buy a book. It can't help that we live in the age of information. Like at this point, like there's just so much opportunity out there for all of us. And I think that people shouldn't be afraid of seeking knowledge. Ten lechacham v'yech kamod. To reach out for and to never give up, never stop pursuing personal improvement.
Dr. Felt, I thank you so much for your time. Where can people find you? Are you on social media, website? Where can people reach out to you?
Funny. So I don't do social media because I'll get too distracted by it and I'm too impulsive and I don't want to end up tweeting something weird. But I have a website, www.adhddoctor. It's spelled out D-O-C-T-O-R. .org. I also try to make myself available on WhatsApp for like short stuff, right? Meaning voice notes or just a quick text back and forth. That kind of stuff I'm more than happy to do. Obviously for like a sit down or a full consult, that would like need to make an appointment kind of thing. But I'm really always happy to help, especially educators. If people want to reach out, I love helping out. I want to do what I can to make it a little easier for all the other people with ADHD who are slogging through life. And if I can help, I really try to.
Dr. Nachi Felt, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. This was a very enlightening conversation, and good luck with everything you're going to be doing.
Awesome. Thank you, Izzo.
My thanks to Dr. Nachi Felt for joining me this week. If you would like to hear the episode I mentioned in the discussion about how technology is infiltrating our lives and what we can do about it, check out episode 11, Navigating Technology in the Digital Age with Dr. Eli Shapiro. Until next time, Kol Tov.
The Jewish Living Podcast is produced by Sreli Pikus. Our theme song is The Band by A.B. Rottenberg. Follow us on Facebook at The Jewish Living Podcast and on Twitter and Instagram at Jewish_living. You can also email the show at jewishlivingpodcast@gmail.com. The Jewish Living Podcast is recorded in conjunction with the Queens Jewish Link.